I searched in vain among what I could find in the professor's personal history to explain the appearance of the voice on the tape recording. I spoke to colleagues to try to understand whether the professor had undergone some profound loss or traumatic event in the time immediately prior to the phenomenon. Apart from his increasing blindness, which may have occasioned a sense of loss, though little was evident on the tapes, no sign of trauma was apparent. He lived a settled life with few financial stresses, in a large house with his second wife, and his children were securely embarked in successful careers. He was a respected scholar in good standing with colleagues and university alike. If there was no obvious psychological explanation, was the voice on the tape indeed that of a spirit, or one of the dead, or something else? Determined to understand, I turned to practice and process to create an experience that paralleled that of the professor. In short, in possession of a similar tape recorder to his own, I set up the machine to record in an empty room, in controlled conditions, and returned after a period of minutes to play back the results. You will not be surprised to learn that my experiments were a disappointment. I used the EVP techniques that I had researched. I asked questions of the room and then left pauses in which voices unheard by human ear could be recorded. I played back the silence repeatedly in order to identify the coalescing of noise into signal, hiss into voice. And I recorded some sections onto my office computer to analyse waveforms, to identify possible anomalies or words. But in truth, none were forthcoming. Sadly, my inquiries must not assume the truth. Close to despair, I was at the point of defeat. I drew my notes together and prepared to deliver them. I sorted through the cassette tapes in the box files, ready to return them, and to my astonishment, I found that the very last shell contained the inlay card, but no tape. With a sense of a trust betrayed, I searched my office, my home, for the missing tape. It would not be found. And then, as I was checking through my own recordings, I noted that one of the tapes was untouched. I was sure that I'd used them all. Turning to the Philips recorder, I opened the lid and found one of the professor's cassettes in the mechanism. I rewound the tape, and to my growing horror and mortification, I realised that I had recorded over one of the professor's own. As I noted before, however, a peculiar technical quirk of this machine, a deficiency in one of the recording heads, resulted not in the erasure of the underlying material, but a superimposition upon it. Muddied by overdubbing, the professor's voice was alternately befogged by the hiss of a silent room, my room, years in the future, beyond the span of his own life, or intermingled with my own voice. And then I seemed to hear another voice, a third voice, in the gaps between our own. Direct reproductions of the professor's voice. A warm barrier. I confess myself an agnostic. I hardly think it was indistinct. I recorded a segment into the computer to analyse its waveforms, but although I could certainly hear a voice, I could make out no words. Clearly the palimpsest-like overwriting of one time, one room, one voice with another had finally produced the conditions for manifestation. What I should do next, however, remained a thorny problem. I dearly wanted to try another recording. As I said, this final tape of the professor ran to a mere 20 minutes in length. But I felt it to be a betrayal of trust to sonically graffito, so to speak, another tape in the professor's archive. The only solution presented itself to me. As this last tape was already compromised, I would over-record once again to try to enhance the possibility of manifesting the other voice. My instinct proved correct. After the second pass of overdubbing, two observations could be made. Firstly, that the voice clearly articulated two phrases, separated by a short pause. And secondly, in the first phrase, the words tape and soul could clearly be heard. I had stumbled upon the proper productive method by accident. It would not be an exaggeration to confess that I feel that I have been vindicated in my approach to this project. My survey and analysis of the tapes will not end in failure. I will indeed find the missing phrase and solve the enigma of the third verse.
One December evening, close to Christmas, most particularly, I abandoned the effort entirely. I gave myself over to the holidays.
Some weeks have passed since I compiled the foregoing report. In this period, I've completed at least a dozen re-recordings, followed by a deep analysis. No further clarity as to the composition of the two phrases, nor yet individual words, have been made apparent to my satisfaction. But I am confident that I will soon make the breakthrough. Of course, I have yet to return the archival cassette tapes. To do so before investigations complete would be a dereliction. I have found myself increasingly uninterested in my former fields of research, and have turned from my somewhat disputatious and competitive relationship with my colleague and rival, Professor Ada Reza. These trifles no longer concern me.
None of the experimental tapes are available to me, nor should I add...
Of the sonic qualities of the tape, I will say this. In short, my much fuller notes and speculations will be published in due course. Although the voice of the professor is now all but lost in the hiss and rumble, he is more present than ever. Playback of the tape is like entering into a chamber whose dimensions are indistinct, but whose depths are profound. A cube whose center is everywhere and whose boundaries are nowhere. In those depths, the professor and the third voice exist. Through further recordings, I must push on, pushed deeper, to locate the true meaning of the words which have been spoken and which will, in time, be revealed.
Perhaps, concerned with increasing blindness, he has simply forgotten it. He stopped mentioning me at only some dozen tapes before the end of the data sequence, and even this became increasingly intermittent. The last recording offered no evidence that it was intended as a final entry. It seemed as though the gaps in time that separated earlier tapes opened and did not close, without deliberation or thought. He seemed neither haunted by the phrase nor frustrated by its indecipherability. As the spool ran out on the last tape, only 20 minutes since 90 had been used, the professor, my cataloguing project.